We would like to acknowledge that the land in which we are gathered on today is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe Nation, specifically the Chippewa Tri-Council, comprised of the Chippewa of Beausoleil, Rama, and Georgina Island First Nations, and most recently, the Mississauga of Credit River First Nation. Ontario is covered by 46 treaties and other agreements and is home to many Indigenous from across Turtle Island, including the Inuit and Métis. These treaties and other agreements, including the One Dish with One Spoon, Wampum Belt Covenant, are agreements to peaceably share and care for the land and its resources. Other Indigenous nations, Europeans, and newcomers were invited into this covenant in the spirit of respect, peace, and friendship. Most of us come here as settlers, immigrants, or newcomers in this generation or generations past. We are all treaty people. Every day, we are mindful of broken covenants and we strive to make this right. We commit to collaborating based on the foundational assumption that Indigenous peoples have the power, strength, and competency to develop culturally specific strategies for their communities. We are dedicated to honoring Indigenous self-determination, history, and culture, and are committed to moving forward in the spirit of reconciliation and respect with all First Nations, Métis, and Inuit people.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Beyond the Stethoscope, a podcast focused on hospice palliative care. I am your host, Laura Bates, a registered nurse and education facilitator with the North Simcoe Muskoka Hospice Palliative Care Network. Today, my guest is going to be Catherine McEwen, a palliative pain and symptom management consultant with the North Simcoe Muskoka Hospice Palliative Care Network, and she is going to further introduce her guest, Tara Green. Take it away, Kathy.
So this morning we have as our guest Tara Green, who is a community nurse with ParaMed. I've known Tara for a few years and we actually worked together in the community before. She is the palliative lead with ParaMed and she also attends palliative rounds on Tuesdays mornings. So good morning, Tara.
Good morning, Kathy. Thank you for having me.
So today we're here to discuss benefits and barriers in community palliative nursing. Palliative care is defined by the World Health Organization as an approach that aims to relieve suffering and improve the quality of living and dying in those patients diagnosed with life-threatening and life-limiting illnesses. These include addressing their physical, psychological, social, and spiritual needs. It involves optimizing living as fully as possible in the time remaining while preparing for dying. Palliative care is also considered a holistic type of care with the client and family at the center of care, managed by the interdisciplinary team. Tara, you and all of your community nurses are valued team members who are supporting clients and families. So, in the community, as a community nurse, what do you believe are benefits to palliative care in the home for clients and families in your care?
Well, first, as you previously mentioned, palliative care provides clients with comfort and relief from the symptoms associated with their illness, but in the community, they can remain in the comfort of their own home. I have found that most clients do prefer to stay in their homes, which is a familiar environment surrounded by their loved ones. This allows clients to experience a higher quality of living and maintain their dignity and autonomy. Another benefit, and one that has really drawn me to palliative care in the community, is that there is a strong emphasis on holistic support, not just with the client, but their families as well. Nurses in the community have the ability to follow people earlier on in their journey because we often have them on service while they are receiving treatment for their illness. So, this helps us to build a relationship with the client and their family while also allowing for continuity of care. And with these relationships established early on, clients can actively participate in developing a care plan that aligns with their values and wishes. In the home, we also recognize the importance of and encourage family involvement. Family members, they are often the primary caregivers, receive education on tips and tricks to providing care in the home, but we are also able to recognize when they may require respite care to prevent burnout and emotional support to help navigate the challenging journey of caring for a loved one with a life-limiting illness. And another huge benefit of palliative care in the home is it can help to reduce unnecessary emergency room visits. We as community nurses have the ability to make extra visits, and we can even visit after hours. I strongly believe that our role is to be an advocate for all clients in the community, but especially for our palliative clients. Often, they do not have the energy or ability to seek out the appropriate team members to assist them. So I recently had a client in the community who was having symptoms of unrelenting pain related to their medical treatments, which had been completed at that time. This pain was an ongoing residual side effect of that treatment. The original reason we were visiting this client was for PICC line care, and once that was discontinued, we were requested to discharge the client. But I ended up finding out that the client was not just experiencing physical symptoms of pain, but was also suffering emotional symptoms. The client felt ignored by their medical team and had ultimately given up on ever being without pain. They were not experiencing a good quality of life, really. So when this client reached out to me expressing these concerns, I spent many hours communicating with different team members, both on the phone and through faxes and reports, to all those involved in their care. And in the end, the client was not discharged. So this allowed the team, along with their physician, to continue to assist this client to better control their pain and support the client emotionally.
Yeah, that's really important that we are there to advocate for these people all the time. So can you discuss the rewards you see as a nurse providing palliative care in the community?
Yeah, so I actually find it to be such a fulfilling career. I really like that palliative care in the community allows a lot of personal growth and learning opportunities. I'm often involved with complex medical and ethical situations, and these have allowed me to utilize and practice my skills in a compassionate and client-centered way. But the most rewarding aspect is the opportunity to make a meaningful difference in the lives of clients and their families during a challenging time. I really enjoy people, getting to know them, learning about their lives, like what they did for a living, how they met their significant other. And I especially enjoy learning about their accomplishments and what they are proud of in their lives. I like that a palliative approach empowers clients to make decisions about their care. We as nurses can facilitate discussions about their goals, values, and end-of-life preferences. And it's especially rewarding to be able to provide comfort and relief, such as when working through a problem or unmanaged symptom, like pain or nausea. It can really change them in their ability to function when symptoms are under control, and they can really start living again. I have become fairly comfortable discussing their fears and helping them to work through them. I just really feel honored to be able to follow a client through their illness and be there to support them and their family through their end of life journey.
Yeah, this can be really rewarding. I know we all have had numerous patients in our backgrounds of community nursing that we have felt all of those feelings for. I know that about 10 years ago, I had a client who was diagnosed with cancer, and it was a late diagnosis. She had a prognosis that was very short. They said 3 to 6 months. She had young adult children. One was a teenager. Anyway, we had some difficulty getting her pain controlled initially, and we were able to work through that and get her on a better pain management situation. But then around Christmas, she sort of come on service in August. So I'm trying to give you a time frame. So from August to December, we had a lot of issues and kind of got things under control. And around Christmas, her eldest child became engaged to be married. And so this was her big goal. She was going to have this huge wedding shower for this couple. And we were all kind of concerned that this was a pretty lofty goal, but she was able to attain that goal. And she did have this wonderful shower for her family. and for this young couple. Anyway, her next goal was she was going to attend the wedding, which was about 3 or 4 months later. And she did attend the wedding. I will admit that at this point, she was sleeping a lot. She was in a wheelchair. She really wasn't high functioning at this point, but she was really focused on getting to this wedding. And about a month later, she was bedfast. She really wasn't doing that well. They told her that they were pregnant. And so in her head, she was going to see this baby be born and meet this child, her first grandchild. So it was, we all became her cheerleaders, basically. It was really so rewarding to see her move through that whole, it was over almost 2 years when they had told her 3 to 6 months. But this woman had such fortitude, such strength, even though her body was giving out on her. She was like skin and bones at the end, but she did get to hold that baby. And she died basically, I'm going to say a few days later. It really wasn't much long after that baby was seen or was visited by her. But that was a really, I don't know, we were always worried that she wasn't going to make any of these goals. And as there were about three nurses and numerous PSWs at that time that visited in the home. And as I said, we were her cheerleaders. And that was a really rewarding experience to follow this client through her journey until her end of life and to see her reach the goals that she wanted to.
Yeah, that can be really rewarding when you're able to be along somebody in that journey and kind of help them when they need it.
Absolutely. So do you believe that palliative care is only for the dying?
Well, when I first began working in the community, I did believe this, but through education, experience, and working with the palliative care team, I have come to understand that palliative care is not only for the dying. I often have clients who get quite upset over being told that they are admitted to our service to receive palliative care. So about a year or so ago, I did the fundamentals course. And early on in that course, there's a diagram in the book that led me to have a much better understanding of palliative care. I'm not entirely sure what it's called, but I have seen it referenced as the Canadian Hospice Palliative Care Association model. So it shows the palliative care starts at the beginning of diagnosis, where interventions may focus on a cure or life-prolonging therapies. And then as the disease progresses and end of life approaches, quality of life and comfort care may take precedence. So this really helped me realize that palliative care was not all about a client dying and that care did not have to wait until a client was dying. Unfortunately, I have found that clients have maybe had family members or friends who have received palliative care late in their illness. And so they believe it is a type of care that only happens at end of life, since this is what they have seen in the past. I usually present the family with this diagram and explain that they can have palliative type care early on in their illness, even while they are receiving treatment, since they may develop symptoms like pain and nausea related to the treatments. And then we're there able to manage those symptoms and support them. I do explain that sometimes treatments don't work or stop working, and that this may not happen to you, but if it does, then we will still be there to support them.
Absolutely. And that's so true. People really get stuck on that word palliative. When they hear palliative, they immediately believe that they're dying. I've had many clients in the past when I enter their room or their home and tell them who I am, or even just call them on the phone. When they hear the word palliative, they're very upset, and it's, you know, we're not there yet. And this is not what's wrong with me. Like, I have all kinds of time, and the doctor never told me that. So it does take some time to explain all of this to them and the type of care that we want to provide for them if they're interested, right?
Yes, exactly. It's not just like, I think people associate palliative care with end of life. And it's really hard to kind of tell them that, no, palliative care is so much more.
Absolutely. So in the community, what challenges do you nurses face when caring for palliative clients as a community nurse?
So we just discussed that clients often have a difficult time accepting that we have been sent to visit them to provide palliative care. I find that this is often the largest hurdle for us to overcome with clients. And then often placing the Edith folder into the home would be our next biggest challenge. Many clients and families are totally against having a DNR, preferring to be resuscitated. And then this can lead to delays in completing this information. There are also a lot of nurses that have had a difficult time approaching the discussion, often having had a bad experience in the past or just not being comfortable with it.
So how do you approach this conversation?
Well, it can be difficult to talk to someone about this topic. Many people believe this means we are not going to provide care or that we're telling them there's no hope. And no one wants to go down a path in which the only possible outcome is death. It's just not very inviting. So I find sometimes clients are angered that some young nurse is in their home asking them not to be resuscitated. Sometimes clients can become quite angry about these types of discussions. So this is why it's so important we receive clients earlier on in their journey so we can develop these relationships that make discussing these topics a bit easier. It can be really difficult when we receive a client who is closer to end of life. We don't want to upset people, but at the same time, these are important conversations to have right away and important to get Edith in place. You know, things happen sometimes and people die sooner than we anticipated. We think we have time to complete these documents or we're not comfortable discussing them, so we put them off. But when a client dies without these in place, it creates a very difficult situation for the family. So without this in place, the police and the coroner become involved, which causes unnecessary trauma and stress for the family. But sometimes it's difficult to explain to them that this will happen if the documentation is not completed. We have also had on occasion the family physician not wanting to discuss DNR with their clients or give us a nurse to pronounce order, telling us, you know, they're not there yet or they don't require palliative care. So this can be a real stressor for the nurse in the community if not receiving support from the physician.
Does this happen very often?
It does. I actually have two clients right now this has happened to. One of the clients was recently diagnosed with cancer. And when I asked for nurse to pronounce orders, the physician specifically said, no, the client is not going to die. So this client is one of those people who likes everything in order. They have a will with their designated power of attorney for personal care listed. They've made all of their funeral arrangements, and they were sent home from hospital with a DNR. So the last document the client wanted in place was this Edith folder. They were extremely stressed that it was not in the home. So the client ended up having to approach the physician. It did eventually get done, but I was disappointed that this conversation had to fall to the client. And then the second client is very elderly with advanced dementia who has recently had quite a significant decline. The nurse to pronounce order was requested, and the physician responded, telling me she did not agree that the death was imminent. So, as we know, death may not be imminent, but given this client's age and other comorbidities, she could die. And it would be so much easier if everything was in place. This person lives in a retirement home, and they recently had a client die that had no DNR and no Edith, and it ended up being a coroner case. So this is an experience that they do not want to repeat.
Yeah, that's it can be an issue. I think sometimes for a lot of physicians and maybe newer physicians who are new to, you know, family practice, they often have a, you know, their focus is on, you know, that the patient is going to get better or that their life is going to be prolonged somehow through treatments. And they don't really understand what it's like in the community if a patient wants to die at home, and that these documents do need to sort of be in place to alleviate, you know, any unnecessary trauma for the family. I mean, because, you know, sometimes it's very traumatic that the patient is dying, and it just creates more trauma if the person does die in the community and they don't have a DNR and they don't have a nurse pronounce order. One of my, go ahead.
So I also find that some physicians are difficult to reach by phone, and sometimes we're too busy in the community to call them, just hoping they will respond to the note that we've sent them. So this, again, is stressful for nursing to have a lack of response from the physician. And really, often families are having the same problem, reaching the physician. So this doesn't reflect the majority of physicians, but it always seems to be the client that is having a problem and the nurse needs help immediately, that we cannot reach them or they don't return our call.
Right.
So,
and when families are stressed out like that, that's when they often end up calling an ambulance, and this person ends up in the emergency room where we really don't want them. We want them at home, right? Where
yes.
we can deal with their issues.
Yeah, exactly. So another huge challenge we have with palliative care in the community, especially in a rural setting, is the shortage of healthcare providers. Like I said earlier, the majority of people do want to die at home, but many are unable to remain at home, mainly related to this shortage, which then puts too much of a burden on the family to care for the client. What has really impacted people dying at home is the shortage of PSWs and the valued care that they provide. So we recently had a client in the community who wanted to die at home. We had explored maybe going to hospice as an alternative, but the client's wish was to die in their home, and the family really wanted to fulfill this wish. So the client did have approval of PSW care for, I think, about 14 hours per week, but only 2 of those hours could be filled because of this shortage. So nursing in the community can have up to 4 visits per day for a palliative client. So myself and another nurse worked together to fill these PSW hours and provide the care needed in the home so they could die at home. This was something we decided to do on our own and were able to do at the time, but we may not always be able to offer this added care.
So I know that PSW is a key position in caring for palliative clients in the community, and we do have quite a shortage of them, but we also, there are occupational therapists also. I think we only have 1 in our whole Muskoka region who can go out to homes. I think sometimes patients being discharged home from hospital who require OT, they will often allow the hospital OT to go out and do an assessment of the home before the patient goes home. But I'm just sort of wondering how that has impacted palliative care in the community.
Yeah, so the OT is waitlisted for many months, I'm finding now. We are still able to order like the Roho or mattresses, different surfaces. Actually, the community nurse is not able to order them. It has to be a clinic nurse who has likely never seen the client at all, or the wound specialist. So if the client doesn't have wounds, the wound specialist has likely not been involved either. So that's another challenge that we face when trying to order these surfaces, but we are able to usually get these surfaces ordered, but I find that the OTs I've worked with in the past, you know, they just walk into the home and they can just spot things that you wouldn't even think about. Different ways to help the family and the client. Another significant challenge is the shortage of nurses with palliative care training. Nurses in the community often wear many hats and may only have very basic training in palliative care. Nurses really need more education. They need to be given the time to attend a course. Sometimes these courses can be quite expensive, and we are not always reimbursed after having taken the initiative to do a course. I do work with quite a few single mothers who need to work and can't afford to not be paid to attend these courses. We are the front line, and if we were all better educated, especially in palliative care, when a majority of our clients are palliative clients, we would be more confident in the care we are providing to our clients.
Absolutely.
I have seen this lack of education evident when providing symptom management for clients in the community. So when a client stops swallowing, we move to treating symptoms with subcutaneous medications, especially for their pain. We have had issues with people being underdosed throughout the night. This occurs because nurses are not educated in community to know how to dose a client when moving from the oral to subcutaneous medication. I've walked into a client's home where the client is in a pain crisis because they were underdosed. So when I first started nursing, I was not aware of the switch between medication routes either. It was only after taking the pills, pumps, and patches course that I learned about the opioid conversion chart. This is not a common occurrence, but it can create a lot of unneeded stress for families and unnecessary pain for the client. It can also be pretty distressing for the nurse that's just walked in and they need to figure out what's happened. And on top of it all, the physicians are not always available to support you in the moment. So again, it all comes back to education.
Yes, and you know, I do hear the story about nurses who are single moms, some of them not being able to afford some of the more formal education that can be offered. But on our website, there is a ton of education that nurses can access, and it's free. We have our Echo Project. They can also access our brown bag lunches. There are all kinds of things there that nurses can use. We also have our nursing resource binder. There is a QR code there. They can download that right from the site. And there's also one for patients and families that nurses can access. So there's a ton of information there that is free. They can do it on their own time. And I think for some of these things, they can also download a certificate that shows that they have, you know, actually done this little seminar or webinar. So
yeah,
that is one thing nurses can do.
I know I found it to be quite useful in the community, especially when you can't get a hold of anybody for the extra support you need.
Right. You can always call us.
Yeah.
I'm out there. Nurses, wherever we work, we're often asked to change our assignment. And this is very easily done if you're a nurse in a building working, you know, in an acute care facility. But when you are out in the community and you get called and asked to change your assignment, I can imagine this can be difficult. I know that yesterday you carried a patient load of 15 clients in your day. So if they were to have called you yesterday and asked you to change your assignment or add to your assignment, which is usually, it's not so much a change, it's an adding to your assignment, what do you do?
Yeah, so for nurses in the community, this is a huge challenge. Often we are expected to pick up clients in an area that could be up to over an hour away from where we are already seeing clients. Our client assignments are often heavy, and then more clients can be added throughout the day. Like you said, we usually have more than 8 clients per day, and when they are added, we are extended in time, not to mention the extra driving involved. So long distances can often mean delays in providing care. This can be especially troublesome when there is an acute problem that needs to be managed in a timely manner. And then along with the larger geographical region to cover, another factor that can delay care is the unpredictability and severity of weather. As we all know, Muskoka winters can be quite harsh. I'm sure we all remember the 4+ feet of snow we got last December. So harsh conditions can result in even longer wait times for symptom management. Weather not only affects the nurses that are trying to get to their clients, but it also causes disruptions to medication delivery as it comes from Markham. So when we can't get to clients in a timely manner, this puts added stress on caregivers as their responsibilities can then become more demanding. So to try and reduce the anxiety and isolation that can arise from severe weather, we do advise clients to have a contingency plan in place. But this is not always possible for people in a rural community like ours, as family and friends are not always close by.
Right. You know, just a few takeaways from what you've just said. You know, the client, your patient load, you know, 15 people in a day, say, you know, palliative patients really require more time. I mean, they are not a visit that you can go in. It's not like a wound care where you go in and do something that's very task oriented and you sort of can be in and out. But with palliative clients, I think that they require more time. And do you kind of book accordingly when you have those kinds of clients?
Yes. So I do try and book at least an hour because I do find that, yeah, they do require more time. And on top of just seeing the client, a lot of the time it requires phone calls to additional team members like the physician or the case coordinator or you, of course. So yeah, on top of just the visit, there's also the added time of trying to reach people, trying to solve a problem.
Right, absolutely. And it is true for people, the geographical areas, you know, sometimes people just don't have, you know, the people there to back them up to care for them, right? You know, so many people are implants to our area now, and especially during COVID, we had a lot of people move into the area. And during COVID, many of them did not get to know their neighbors, and most of their families were either, you know, in Hamilton or the Niagara region or in the Greater Toronto area. And they have young families who are working, who also have young families, and they're all working. And so they're not there to really assist that person. So a lot of people have moved into our area who don't have a lot of supports in the community to begin with. And then our supports also are somewhat, you know, they're not the best here in Muskoka as far as supports go for people in homes, such as nursing is not always there on a daily basis, or you're not allowed to be there every day. You have PSWs who are in great demand. We just don't have the PSWs here to cover what people should, you know, what kind of care they feel they should be receiving or that they received elsewhere.
Yes. So we actually have a client who recently moved up here from the GTA. While they were in the GTA, they were getting, I believe, 3 nursing visits a day and up to 4 PSW visits a day. So now they've moved here and they are quite upset that, you know, nursing was approved for once a day, but we just haven't been able to even offer them that. So nursing has gone down significantly and they are quite upset. But, you know, I'm trying to explain to them that it is a rural community and we don't have the staffing to support all the visits that they're wanting.
Right. That's hard. I mean, the only thing you can do is direct them back to home and community care, because that's a difficult battle for nursing in the home. When you go in, you already, you know, you're walking into a home where people are angry already, right? And some of that is not just anger. They, you know, they're really stressed out, emotionally upset. And so it comes out as anger. I don't think they really mean it to be angry with you, but sometimes it feels that way and it's hurtful, isn't it?
I do know that the spouse is quite overwhelmed because the client does have pretty complex needs, which are now falling to the spouse. So I can see that they are quite frustrated and overwhelmed, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you or any of your coworkers, have you felt the impact of the ambulatory care centers in providing palliative care, since this is a fairly new ACC that was opened, I'm thinking maybe a year ago, if not less than a year? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was about a year ago that our clinic opened in Gravenhurst. I haven't really noticed too much of a change. I was able to speak with two of our clinic nurses about palliative care in the clinic. They did say it is mostly task-based, like wound care, hydration, pet care, stuff like that, but they do also receive referrals for palliative care. So, as our clinic is fairly new, most of the nurses working in there were actually community nurses beforehand. So, they do have a bit of palliative care experience. They did say they are using tools such as PPS and ESAS to assess clients. They also said that they typically only see clients in the clinic who have a PPS of 70% or higher. And that as the PPS decreases, they see an increase in falls and frailty, which has been putting clients at risk. So this is when they would transfer them to in-home care. And as it is mainly task-based, once that task is complete, I don't know if they are able to keep them on service with the foresight to see they may require further care in the future. So I actually had a client I admitted about 5 years ago for nephrostomy care related to prostate cancer. After a few years, the nephrostomy tube was removed, but I kept this client on service, even though they were fairly stable at the time, because I knew they would be undergoing aggressive treatment in the future. And then after a few months, the client ended up with unmanaged symptoms such as constipation and pain. But since they were still on service, I was able to assist them in the home, avoiding a hospital trip or possible admission. So over the next few years, this client ended up requiring things like wound care, hydration, and symptom management. So if they had been discharged when the original task was complete, they would have had to attend their doctor's office or hospital as each new issue came up. And then with this, they could have ended up on service with a different agency or even just a different nurse at our agency who would not have been familiar with their history.
Yeah, that is a problem when patients are discharged. They often don't come back to the same agency. They go to a different agency, and we don't get a lot of information when we are admitting people into the community. We try to take all of that history from the patient, but it would be nice if we had more information when we're admitting them. So, do you ever have issues? We're going to move on here to something a little different. Do you ever have issues separating your personal life from your professional life as a community nurse?
Yeah, so this can actually be a bit tricky in community. You know, in the hospital, I found you would see the same patients, you know, over a few days, but typically you were always having new patients, you know, not really having that time to get to really know them and form those relationships. But it's impossible not to develop close relationships with clients and their families in the community, especially when we've been seeing them for years at a time, usually. So sometimes we're seeing them multiple times a week or even daily. So I do find it important to set out clear boundaries, such as my work hours and my responsibilities that I will be doing with them. I let them know how to reach someone after hours. And that all nurses will be capable of helping them. Because I know that's one thing that I, you know, when the clients form a relationship with their nurse, they usually feel that they don't want any other nurse. Nobody else can help them like you can. So they're often, you know, quite resistant to anybody new. And I find that that can be a bit of a challenge, especially if you're off or you're on vacation. So, I know a lot of us in the community also have a hard time shutting down after work since we continue to get calls and emails up to 10 o'clock at night. So, what I do is I put my phone and tablet away after a certain time. I turn off the notifications so I'm not constantly being drawn back in.
That's good. I wished I'd learned to do that when I was working in the community. My phone and everything was always plugged in anyway. Nurses in the community are often dealing with death on a regular basis, and you, Tara, do the majority of the MAID clients at ParaMed. So I'm just wondering, what do you do for self-care?
Well, I know this is going to sound a bit weird, but something that really helps me at the end of the day is actually just making dinner. So I enjoy being in the kitchen alone, and then I find that I'm able to reflect on the day during that time. I know my husband sometimes has to wait over 2 hours for dinner since I can get lost in thought and off track, but I have found it to be one of the best things for my mental health. Is just that time to reflect, go over what I did, what I could have done, what I want to do. I also really enjoy being outside. I'm lucky to live close to the Hunter's Bay Trail, so my dog and I will often take walks along the water. And living in such a beautiful area, we really like to take advantage of exploring and hiking new areas. I always find this to be a really good de-stressor. And another thing I do regularly is game night. So this is a great opportunity to really shut down from work. And since my fellow gamers are not work friends, there is no shop talk, which is really important to have a break from work talking about work. I would say the most important thing that I do for myself, especially being in such an emotionally demanding profession, is talking with my husband, family, and friends. I find it helpful to discuss cases that have been particularly challenging and difficult. I like that I can get different perspectives and gain insight from everyone I talk to. And I find that by doing this, it's really opened up conversations about death amongst my family members, and it's really not so taboo anymore in the home.
That's good. And that's true, eh? That's kind of fun in a way that you've been able to go over that barrier, that challenge with family, because it was sort of a taboo conversation in your household, was it not? If
Yes,
I remember,
it definitely was.
You were, yeah, that it was an issue. So that's really a challenge that you've overcome within family, talking about it. Yeah. So this sort of brings our podcast to an end. So for me, there are many benefits and yes, barriers to providing palliative care in the community. But in my own opinion, I am probably being biased here, but I do feel that Muskoka provides excellent palliative care to the clients in our communities. Both the teams in the North and the South that visit in the home are very dedicated medical professionals who are providing compassionate care. We also have two hospices in the Muskoka region who provide beyond excellent care to our end-of-life clients. I strongly feel that here in Muskoka, the resources needed to provide high-quality palliative care are definitely available for all. I would like to thank you, Tara, for sharing your insights on barriers and benefits of palliative care in the community. It is a reminder of the vital role nurses play in ensuring that individuals facing a life-limiting illness receive timely, compassionate, and comprehensive care. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Kathy.
You're welcome, Tara.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Tara.